Well, I'm certainly excited to be here. I've become pretty good friends with Marshy and Kim and so many other women over this process. Certainly it has been a long battle. I was formerly an NCAA athlete as well. I ran cross country. I'm a mom of two junior athletes, a girl and a boy, and I'm a current elite masters cyclist. Regionally, I compete at the professional elite level, and then on the national level, I compete on the elite masters level. So let's go ahead and start this slideshow. So just a quick overview. I wanted to, for those who might be looking at this video later, I just wanted to provide you guys with a little summary of what to expect. So we'll just jump right in. So first of all, when we think about cycling and the topic of men in women's sport, it's mind-boggling how many men are actually in cycling. And if we try and think about, like, well, when was the first time? And the first time that it really became national and international attention was at UCI Masters Track Worlds in Los Angeles, California in 2018. Now, in the upper left-hand corner, you can see three individuals. The middle individual is Rachel McKinnon, now known as Victoria Ivey, who not only captured the world's attention by getting the first gold medal in a women's event, but also a female world record. And the athlete to his left, our right, is Jen. And she's a surgeon. She actually said, "It's not fair." And those three words sparked this huge controversy and essentially what has become now the big debate. So I kind of feel like that's like the first thing that happened. I was there. I witnessed so many athletes being frustrated, having seen Rachel's stats online, seeing him accomplish way more than most women do in their entire career. He did all of that within a few months prior to competition. It was just really frustrating for everyone. And the biggest thing about that was that we couldn't prove that it wasn't right. And that is what I'll get into a little bit later. Men have really been competing in women's sport and cycling for a long time. I mean, we've had hints of this happening, in the late 90s, early 2000s, where it just was kind of, whispered and hush-hushed. But it has certainly come to the forefront in these last few years. So in order to talk about cycling, it's a little bit confusing, but you need to talk about who is the governing body and how does all of this fit in with how rules and policies are made? So the UCI is the world governing body of cycling. It stands for Union Cycling Internationale, and the American way we say it is the International Cycling Union. So they oversee all of the rules in cycling, and they're recognized by the IOC, the International Olympic Committee. So most recently, they joined the ranks of the same governing world bodies. And in July, they kind of surprised a lot of us by stating and admitting that there's enough evidence and common sense, as we all know, to prove that men cannot be females. They can't. And there's always going to be an unfair advantage. Unfortunately, they didn't take the most extreme case of saying that if you have XY chromosomes, you're a male and you can't compete as a female. They've played it safe, like most governing bodies, and said, well, if you've experienced male puberty, then you're not eligible. And they kind of cut this off at age 12. So the UCI has now protected elite UCI events. Unfortunately, in the United States, we have the USA Cycling or USAC as our national governing body. And rather than follow in the footsteps of the UCI, they've instead said that, we're going to have our own policies, and those are going to start in 2024. To talk also a little bit about cycling, there's quite a lot of disciplines, which I think is really confusing, and they use different bikes and different settings. There's different rules. We've got road, which is what you think of for like the Tour de France. We have mountain biking, which is, you're in the trails and it's a very knobby suspension bike. You've got track, which is on a generally like a wooden or a concrete velodrome, either indoor or outdoor. There's no brakes involved in that. It's just a single speed. There's BMX. And then we've also got cyclocross, which is a kind of a combination of road and mountain biking, and then we have gravel, which is mostly ridden on gravel trails. The first four that I mentioned are Olympic sports. And then the other two are not Olympic sports. All of them have world championships, and any of those events that are covered by the UCI will have the protections where men aren't able to compete. Okay, let's see. So just to talk a little bit about USA Cycling's policy, they've now determined, and I just had this confirmed from an email of them, that they've divided all females into either Group A or Group B. So your Group A, you're a top athlete, you're a Cat 1 or a Cat 2, and Group B athletes are Cat 3, Cat 4, Cat 5, or collegiates. They did confirm that any national championship, regardless of what category you are, if you're in a national championship race, you have to adhere to the Group A policies, which are a little bit more restrictive. You have to have a reduced testosterone for a minimum of 24 months. And then you have to apply and maintain a reduced testosterone for your period of eligibility while you're competing. The trouble is that with the Group B athletes, which are all collegiates, they're not protected in the least. It's pretty much a self-ID. You just register 30 days before your race. And, you know, that's that. So I feel like our collegiate women are still probably, you know, going to be taken advantage of and not given any of the protections of any other females for national championship races. So let's just talk a little bit about why I decided to become involved and what kind of sparked me putting myself into the forefront. And there is definitely a period, and I'll talk a little bit about it, where I just realized that the narrative was going to be owned by males, or it was going to be owned by women like me who chose to speak out. And that's just sort of the decision that I made once I just realized in my bones that this was unfair and that we needed to just keep talking about it. What happened for me is I witnessed the UCI event in LA, as I said, and then it started to happen a little bit more often, where this trans agenda was creeping into everyday life. And for me, trying to just be a person who asks questions and talk to everybody about this situation, which apparently most people, if you even ask a question, you're considered a transphobe. I started getting a lot of harassment online. And I also too found out that Mountain Bike Marathon Nationals the venue was changed from one location to another because the state that was going to host it had passed a bill protecting women in sport. And so USA Cycling decided to move it to a different location. And I decided that I was going to raise money and go race a mountain bike, which I generally don't do, in a custom jersey. And I kind of became known in a lot of circles as the custom jersey girl. And where that led me was to have a direct confrontation with these two athletes whose names you may recognize. So Austin Killips was the first UCI elite male to take points in a women's race. I actually was in the first UCI race that he raced in Roanoke, and met him and talked with him. And as well, Tiffany Thomas, who you see on the right, he was actually there as well and knew who I was. I didn't know who he was. And he had actually come up to me and said, you know, tell me about your opinions of transgender women in women's sport. And I gave a very politically calm response and said, I'd be happy to talk about it with you. And then that's kind of what sparked this huge controversy for me, because both of these athletes actually reported me to Safe Sport and accused me of sexual harassment and sexual misconduct. And so that was pretty much what filled up my entire year in 2021. So here you'll see the Safe Women's Sports jersey that I was talking about. It definitely made me vulnerable in some races. We went back to Maryland where we were visiting family, and I did a couple of races up in the Mid-Atlantic, sort of known as the Mabra series. And they're extremely woke. They've actually staged a protest because they knew that I was going to be there. And luckily I had my Save Women's Sports jersey in the car. And so I decided to, like, you know, stand on the podium with the Save Women's Sports jersey on. it just kind of brought front and center to me how some people just really want to go out of their way to make it difficult for other women. And I felt like, you know, generally if it's, you know, bullying online, it's one thing, but it just also made me just have even more resolve to speak out about this in as many ways as I possibly could. One of the things that I realized too in, I think this is 2002, Cyclocross Nationals, or sorry, 2021, I was working with Beth Stelzer in Save Women Sports and was one of her ambassadors. And I realized when I was there that it was a great opportunity because we hadn't heard from USA Cycling. They'd pretty much been ignoring any of our complaints or requests for understanding how it is that these males were eligible to compete with females. And so I worked with a group of nonviolent protesters and we brought them in to the race. I studied the footage of the days leading up to the race to determine where the cameras would be. And I staged them across the course. And they held up signs only when the lead rider was coming through so that the signs would be on international TV. And so there was absolutely no interaction with any of the athletes. And as a matter of fact, many of the athletes, actually all of the athletes, not a single one reported being yelled at or screamed at or interacted with in any way while they were racing. Unfortunately, most of the cycling media said the opposite and said that they were, you know, essentially violent protesters. So their response the next year after USA Cycling sent out a, they sent out a policy saying that you have to have a certain code of conduct, you're not allowed to do any sort of protests. There were no female-centered protests that year. However, a group of trans activists actually brought in two gun clubs, and you can see that picture on the right. And they were really bragging about how they had more than walkie-talkies. They were wearing balaclavas, and it was a pretty frightening experience, not only for USA Cycling, but for all of the individuals who were at that race that year. Of course, there weren't really any repercussions from that. The last protest that we did, and this was right before the UCI decided to change their policy. Austin Killips at this point in, you know, by 2023 had gone from being, you know, a top 10 finisher in the cyclocross events, which was his first his first year actually competing at the UCI level. Within the next year, he was already one of the top cyclocross females in the United States. But then he was also taking on really high performances. He was excelling and winning really large races, the Tour of Gila. And he actually had come to Knoxville to race in the professional race. And that's when we joined together with the Inga Thompson, who had sponsored me with a jersey, and put together a protest and a rally. And Riley Gaines was there, and it was really great. We had a lot of positive feedback from a lot of the professional riders, the coaches, the directors. And I thought one of the best things was, you know, protesting on the course and having the actual race officials on the motorcycles giving me the thumbs up. I mean, I feel like everybody's really been silenced about this issue. How have I contributed to the debate? So, you know, I'm a stay-at-home mom. I have two young children. They're 9 and 11. And, you know, I have been working on this for literally 7 years, whether racing against males in female sport, you know, talking about it with whomever I possibly can. But I've had like the unique, I feel, opportunity to really use my voice to talk in a very clear and concise way, in a very practiced way, about the debate and why it's not fair. And I can't emphasize enough, the most important thing in all of this is just to maintain communication about why this isn't fair and helping to have everyone realize, whether they agree with you or not, what the merits of the case are. And it really does come down to common sense and science and just the simple fact that males do not belong in female sport. So I not only worked with Beth Stelzer and we did a couple of podcasts, but I've been on the Laura Ingraham show, which was pretty phenomenal. I've testified in 3 different states. I've been on a couple of different Fox News stations. But what I'm most proud about is working with my state here in North Carolina, not only to propose the bill to work through the House and the Senate, but then also to be there when they passed it into law. And I was really excited to be able to do that with my daughter, Gemma, who was, it was a great experience for her. We were introduced on both the House and the Senate when that bill had been vetoed by our governor, but then they overrode it and it was passed into law this past August. I was also fortunate to go to the Capitol and speak on the Capitol steps with Moms for America. It's just been, I feel like I've just really been given this awesome responsibility to use my voice, my experience as a lifelong athlete, as somebody who's always asked a lot of questions and talked to a lot of different people and tried to understand the best that I can what the situation is, and just to help other people understand who this affects and how it's not emotional. It's not an emotional debate. It's based on science. And there are certainly a lot of emotions that women and girls are feeling when they're being shut out and not being allowed to talk about this. Another thing that I'm really proud of is that I was able to write an opinion piece for the Carolina Journal. A huge fact that I love talking about is that I am a registered Democrat, and you know, I moved to Chapel Hill after graduate school. I moved there from Ireland, where I got my master's degree. I lived in Chapel Hill, which is kind of the mecca of overeducated, liberal, minded people. I worked as, or I volunteered as a AmeriCorps fellow for 2 years, and I worked at the university for 8. So the fact that I've been able to communicate with a lot of people who are Democrats and show that this just isn't a conservative issue, it's a female issue, it's a female rights issue, and women deserve to have protected classes in sport and also in other places. Single-sex spaces exist for a reason, and we should maintain them. A couple of the organizations. So as I mentioned, you know, back in 2017, 2018, when we were starting to see this as athletes and we were just talking amongst ourselves, there really wasn't very much going on. But we were able to look to this organization in particular, Fair Play for Women, which is based out of the UK. And they had been experiencing a lot of this before it became in the forefront of the US. So I felt like their support and helping to work with them to find information beyond what it was that we were told, saying, you know, oh, we should accept that trans women, men should be in our sport, and knowing that it wasn't right, they were just really instrumental in being a support and resource. Save Women's Sports, you know, with Beth Stelzer, I mean, she really was somebody who made a lot of waves and gave a lot of women and men a place to talk about why this was unfair and what we can do about it. So I'm very grateful to her. And then you can't talk about men in cycling without mentioning iHeartBikes. I mean, this individual has really brought front and center the sheer number of men who are masquerading as women in female sport. And if you aren't aware of iHeartBikes, they're definitely worth a follow, because with like a tongue-in-cheek kind of description, you know, they're able to really show everyone how this isn't a tiny issue. It has become a huge issue in cycling. And then, of course, I'm eternally grateful for Icons Women, being a part of, you know, Icons and in the background a little bit, and having their support and having a place to talk about this and seeing all of the work that has been done in such a short period of time. I mean, the mountain is high, but every day we climb a little bit of it, and we don't do it alone. We do it with the support of so many of you, and it's just growing every day, which I'm thankful for. When I talk about why it is that I've become involved in this and how it is that other people can do this as well, I honestly have to say, you know, it's really just about educating yourself. It's reading everything. It's understanding the argument, and it's talking to everyone. You know, I made a very specific decision when I was first being put in the forefront and being called all sorts of names. I decided that I was going to make every single post I made public. you know, from a, having a very private Facebook page, I just decided to say that every single thing that I'd post about men in women's sport would be public. And then as well, like I go out and I talk to everybody about this. I don't care if you're in the elevator next to me or if you pass me on the hiking trail or if we're standing on the sideline of my daughter's soccer game or son's soccer game or in the car line. I'll somehow find a way to say, hey, so what do you think about, you know, transgender individuals playing sport, about boys playing sport as girls. I also feel, especially having been at this for over 7 years, I understand that this is a long-term issue. When we were first looking at this, we were told that it might not even be resolved in our lifetime, which just is heartbreaking. And it seems like we've made so much movement in the past 5 years that I think I'd actually have to disagree with that now. I think the other really important thing is to use the correct terminology. I don't think it's offensive to call men men. And I think we all need to own that a little bit and understand that when it comes to sport and biology, we can't pretend that a human can change their sex. They absolutely cannot. Men are men and they don't belong in female sport. I think too, you know, when we talk individually with other people, it becomes like a really emotional issue. And that's something that we can combat by just sticking to the facts and staying on the message and just listening to people talk, because there is certainly a time when I disagreed with the idea that we can't be inclusive. And I remember very specifically when I was talking with my, you know, best friend, Marnie Harker, and she was sitting on the track and she was telling me why it was unfair that she had to register and compete against males in her event. And it really was this moment where I had been this, you know, let's let everybody have their place and let's let everybody have sport. And then something clicked and I realized that's not fair. There's no way that that's going to have, that's going to be fair for anybody in the long term. The other thing I would say is don't waste your time with social media debates, but do provide support. I mean, there's a lot of movement that happens. There's a lot of people that get their information from social media, but if there is trolls or if there's individuals who are just trying to like suck you down into a deep, dark place, it's obviously not going to work out for you in the long run. Save yourself the sanity and just, you know, move on, post what you want, but don't try and get into a debate with people whose minds are never going to be changed. The other thing I would say is ask your local sports programs what they're doing to provide fair opportunities for women and girls. Like if you have children, ask about it before it becomes an issue. Find out if there's a policy, help them work on a policy that's fair for women and girls. And then lastly, but not least, join the ICONS network. And then I will say the other thing that motivates me beyond a doubt, and I always get emotional when I talk about my daughter, but it is my daughter. I mean, she's a phenomenal athlete. She just recently was on the national podium at cyclocross. She got fifth place in her first ever race. She's a wonderful soccer player. She's about to test for her black belt in Taekwondo. She loves snowboarding. I want her to have the opportunities that I had. I've been an athlete my entire life and it helped me not only choose my college, but succeed at college with a full ride, 4 years of being a leader and an athlete at my university and also beyond. You know, I feel like I am still a really competitive athlete, but we're definitely at opposite ends of our athletic journeys. And I want to do everything to not only ensure that she, but that, you know, all girls have an opportunity for safe and fair sport. And that is the end of my presentation.